Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text next step to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 Hope line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Bosni Lambre. On today, and joined as always, sorry, I got lost there in my bit. It's been a minute. Joined as always by my partner, Nando Vila. What's good, my brother?
Doing well. Back in L.A., baby.
Back in L.A., left South Beach, left Miami-Dade because they hate Biden too much.
That's right. I brought my talents back from South Beach.
Exactly.
Venice, California.
On today's show, we want to debut a new segment on the show. It's surrounding our former president, the first black president of the United States of America. No, not Bill Clinton. We're talking about Barack Obama, y'all. We're going to debut a new segment, and it's a theme that we've been hitting on throughout the week, so you guys won't be surprised, but I think it'll be a fun thing to sort of start. Because Barry's public profile is not, I don't think it's just the book. I think this is just the new normal. Barry's just going to be a public person from now on. And we're going to talk and we're going to debut a new segment with Barry. And then, of course, all the way down in Dixie, the heart of Dixie, Alabama, Amazon, they fixing to fight a union down there. These folks, 1,500 folks in Alabama put together a damn union right under Jeff Bezos' nose.
Yep.
We're going to get into the ramifications of that, what it means for a union to form in the heart of Dixie, and what it means about, you know, the general retail politics that we see in the motherfucking Democratic Party. But first, our friend, and by friend I mean mortal enemy, Mitch McConnell, has put on the table a $900 billion.
No. It's not Mitch McConnell. That's the important part.
Oh, excuse me. It's not Mitch McConnell. Sorry. A bipartisan.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the key point to understand. Mitch McConnell was not involved in these talks. Yeah.
Right. This was bipartisan. The funny thing is the fact that they called it bipartisan, I took that to mean that it had Mitch McConnell's tacit approval. Because they don't move if McConnell's not moving. They never do. They always threaten. They always be like, well, man, I gotta give it up to my constituents. But they never actually do it. So I just assumed, sorry, guys, but McConnell's not a part of this. I just assumed that McConnell gave it whatever. Go ahead, do your thing. But a bipartisan led by our favorite Democrat, Joe Manchin, in the Senate, a $900 billion bill. Sort of the headline feature of this bill, Nando, is the fact that it gives Teflon invisibility cloak, a force field, whatever you want to call it, to corporations and liability concerns as it relates to COVID-19, health fuck-ups, deaths, God forbid, et cetera, has no fucking stimulus checks for American workers, and, you know, provides a little bit of more bread for uninsurance employment benefits. Nando, I read it. I was like, this is so terrible. It's tepid. Yeah. It's worse than the one that was on the table before the election. Obviously, we knew that was going to be the case. And you know what? We talked about it on the show. Nancy Pelosi wanted to play chicken. She decided politically it would help Trump to actually send checks out to people, and that the corporate liability stuff was a non-starter, which sounds good in theory, but getting people the UI benefits and the stimulus checks out, even if it would have helped President Trump, I think just was a great calculation and a gamble to take. We thought it was. They went the other way. Now this is what the people have come back with, Nando.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's worth reminding people that the first stimulus package, the CARES Act, which was passed in the spring, has basically all run out. And that really kind of kept people afloat during the summer. It's probably part of the reason why we're seeing a spike now, is because essentially, if you don't pay people to stay home, people will not stay home, because if they got to work, they got to do stuff, they got to, you know, they got to put bread on the table. It's just inevitable. So if you don't pay people to basically not show up to work, people will end up going out to work, and that's going to spread the virus. So the economic relief package basically ran out in July and August. You know, obviously the $1,200 check was the one-time thing, but the expanded unemployment insurance ran out. And few more things are running out in December, which is basically like the foreclosure freezes and all that stuff. So there desperately needs to be another economic stimulus. There desperately needs something to hold us over until the vaccine gets rolled out, which could be as early as next spring, maybe in the summer. It looks like they already have the vaccine. Now it's just a matter of mass producing it and distributing it, which is no small thing, especially in this country where everything's broken. But yeah, you just gotta realize that what ended up happening is what we kind of thought at the time, which was that the Democrats were giving away all their leverage in the CARES Act, in that putting that small kind of time frame on it meant that there was no incentive for the Republicans led by Mitch McConnell to come back and do another deal. There might have been an incentive while Trump was still in office, because he desperately wanted one, because he knew it would help him politically. And it's true. It would have helped him politically. I think one of the reasons why Trump did better than expected is because he gave people checks in the summer, and that probably saw an uptick in his support. And had he given checks again in the fall when it was needed again, he probably would have seen even more support. Would he have won? I don't know. I don't think so. Probably, maybe, but it's impossible to know.
Joe Biden won by 4.5 points, y'all.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe Trump would have won had they done the stimulus before the election. But also, like, the stimulus is needed. If not, people die. People, like, go into poverty. Like, there's mass human suffering. And now that Joe Biden is going to be president and that Mitch McConnell controls the Senate, he has zero incentive to pass anything. He has zero incentive any sort of relief. The only thing he wants right now, because he got the massive giveaway to corporate America that he wanted. He got it already. Gave him $4 trillion. We've talked about this a million times. He gave $4 trillion to his corporate friends. What else could they want? The only thing that they kind of want is the liability insurance, which Mitch McConnell wants it to be for 5 years. Basically, a five-year
moratorium.
Liability. Yeah, moratorium on liability for businesses that get people sick. That's the only thing he's got left, because he got everything else he wanted. So what's he going to do? Like, there's this little bipartisan committee of like Mitt Romney and Joe Manchin and stuff like that. They put together a little deal, which the deal itself is not enough, although it's something. And Mitch McConnell has no incentive to do anything about it. Like, even if the Democrats wanted to do it, which I'm sure they do, Mitch McConnell is just like not going to allow it. I mean, I just don't see how he would. This includes things like, you know, tens of billions of dollars to getting the vaccine mass distributed. You know, like that's a very important part of the whole stimulus. I mean, there's like obviously the economic stimulus, just like, you know, poor people and poor workers who have to stay home and don't have a way to make a living. But there's also just like the sheer money it takes to mass produce a vaccine and give it to everyone.
You know, and again, I think the reason why this is even more important is because it's something that we talk about all the time on the show. And it's the fact that you can't trust the Dems to actually go out and effectively publicly make their case that there needs to be more money. They're not going. Even if they tried, we have no reason to think that they would be able to effectively make the case to the American people that politically it would be disadvantageous to Mitch McConnell to not do something. That's what I think is the real problem. Like, for something that's so obviously needed and necessary, they can never make the case that Republicans are fucking people. They don't know how to do it. And I think what you saw with Nancy Pelosi, remember when we talked about that clip where she was getting sassy with who was she getting sassy with? It was Wolf Blitzer. Blitzer clip where she was getting sassy with people. And she was like, well, you ain't seeing it, and I saw it, and it's a corporate giveaway, and yada, yada, yada. And Wolf Blitzer's like, yeah, that's cool, but people, exactly what you just said, Nando, but people are dying. People's rent is due. Yeah. People are getting evicted. People are getting fucked. Like, I get your political calculations, but people need help. Nancy Pelosi basically called him a know-nothing idiot loser, and now this is what's on the table. And again, she's not going to go back on Wolf Blitzer and explain to us what the plan is. What the plan is to make it better, how we make it better, and you don't even tell me, and you know what's going to come out of it. The Dems are going to say, well, we were really bullish on our prospects in the Senate, and we just knew we were going to win the Senate and the presidency, and we knew we were going to be able to do it on our own, and it's like, why? On what planet does that even make sense?
That's not, even if they win the Senate, that's not a guarantee, because even if they win the two special elections in Georgia, or even had they won the Senate by two or three seats, they would still need to do something called abolishing the filibuster.
Right.
Because as long as they don't have 60 seats, Mitch McConnell can still block anything by using the filibuster. Unless they abolish the filibuster, of which there is no unity in the Democratic caucus to do, and it would be an absolutely necessary prerequisite to do anything. Like, you know, it used to be you needed 51 votes to pass something, or 50 plus the vice president. Now you need 60 because McConnell has basically used the filibuster.
Well, no, the Democrats need 60.
The Democrats need 60. The Democrats don't do it the other way. They don't filibuster the Republican stuff. They don't, not in the same way. But it's just, Joe Manchin has already said that he won't abolish the filibuster. So, like, okay, unless they can convince him and every single other Democrat in the Senate, which I'm sure there's many more who don't want to abolish the filibuster just because they're very conservative in their outlook. So that's not even a guarantee. So, yeah, I mean, this goes back to what you got to use your leverage when you have it. You know, when you have leverage, you got to hold the line and use it. And the Democrats did not. And now we're seeing the effects.
And again, the idea that Joe Biden, the president Joe Biden, is going to go out in public and stump for the necessary amount of stimulus for the American people. Are you fucking kidding me? He didn't even campaign for himself. This guy didn't even campaign for his own presidency. Okay, so the idea that he's going to be able to effectively communicate he never effectively communicated the merits of his own presidency. He's going to come out and communicate the merits of a bigger stimulus to the American people to put political pressure on the Republicans. It's yeah, man, it's bleak. And again, it's I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. We talked about it here on the show. Take the deal. Get people right. Yeah. Do the right thing by people. So what did the Republicans get to take a victory lap on it? So if you guys ever knew how to effectively do this type of shit, you'd be taking victory laps on it too. But, you know, it is what it is. They'll never do that. They just were so scared of the idea that Trump might get up, you know, might get a boost from it. It might win. And damn the people. And now here we are. And I would love to see Nancy go on the Sunday shows, go on Joy Ann Reed or Lawrence McDonald or whatever the fuck his name is.
O'Donnell,
Lawrence,
it's Irish.
Excuse me, O'Reilly. Lawrence O'Donnell, my bad, Larry O. You know, go on there and explain to the American people why it was better for her to not take that damn deal, but we won't see it. Anyway, that's the latest with the stimulus. We move on to something, again, rarely do we ever get to talk about good news out here. And now we move on to the state of Alabama, a place called Bessemer, Alabama, at a brand new Amazon facility. They've applied with the National Labor Relations Board. They've applied for unionship. This is a plant with 1,500 people, okay? They got 1,500 workers on board for this, which I think is important when you talk about worker solidarity and collectivism in sticking it to the man. 1,500 people have applied for unionship. And again, this is in the backdrop, guys. And I think it's important that y'all realize this. And I've said this many other times on the show. When I was in college, I worked part-time at UPS. I was a member of the Teamsters Union as a part-time worker. As a part-time worker, I got full bennies and union protection. The pay was so-so. The work was tough. But I got full bennies and union protection. Essentially, if I was not late, if I did not miss work, I could not be fired. This is right. UPS. UPS, don't get it twisted. They get money. They get paper. But they could afford to do it. UPS could afford to be UP fucking S, the best freaking shipping company in America, still make incredible profits while maintaining a strong ass union. Shouts to the Teamsters. UPS does it all across this fucking nation. And so the backdrop for this, what's happening in Bessemer, Alabama, is Amazon's record profits during the pandemic. Jeff Bezos being the richest man in the fucking world.
In the history of the world.
In the history of the world. And these people are like, we want our peace. Thank you. We're part of why you're able to make these record profits in Amazon while everybody's home for the pandemic, ordering God knows what, ordering dildos. People, hey, you guys remember that famous clip where my man was like, yo, we understand shipping stuff like masks and gloves and all of that, but dildos?
Man, that's what you need in the pandemic. You can't, there's no Tinder. You can't go on dates. You know, like you need some sort of relief at home.
And so again, and you know, and it's important for the listeners to know, Nando, that Jeff Bezos and Amazon have been union busting.
Oh, yeah.
They've been so diligent about keeping unions out of Amazon since the beginning. And so I feel so heartened when Nando sent me the story from the Jacobin about these people in Alabama. And it's important, again, Nando, and I want you to jump in here, of course, because this is Dixieland. Mm-hmm. This is the reddest of the red.
Yeah.
And allegedly, collectivism, workers' rights, workers' co-ops, unions are supposed to be a pillar of the Democratic Party. Ha! Mm. Hold on.
You know who the only Democrat who has spoken in favor of this unionization drive has been?
Who's that?
Guess. Take a guess.
Sherrod Brown.
No. Bernie Sanders.
Oh, that's it. Of course. I mean, he's not a Democrat, though, so I don't even know why I even counted him. Of course. Not a
silence from everyone else.
Silence from everybody else. Nobody in solidarity with these people. And again, this is Amazon, guys. They can afford it. The only reason not to have unions is pure greed on there's no explanation. For Amazon not paying these guys full time, not paying them a livable wage, not giving them bennies, not giving them a pension, not giving them all that stuff. It's literally just greed from one of the richest companies in the history of man. And again, nobody in the Democratic Party is even going to step up and talk about it. They'd rather say, well, those people should be trying to become engineers at Google instead anyway. Well, if we can only turn those people into engineers, that's what the fuck they want to tell you.
They should call people Latinx instead of
Exactly. And again, and I bring it up because, you know, and I know my liberal friends, black friends specifically, are going to be mad about me, about the idea that we would try to be in solidarity in for the express purpose of a united working people against the fucking enemies that we have in this country. Your enemy is not these people who work at the Amazon factory. They might call you nigger. They might not want you to date their daughter, but effectively these are powerless people. They don't have shit. Okay? Your enemy, I'm sorry, black and brown people,
is Jeff Bezos.
Is Jeff Bezos. Because the example that he sets gets carried out where else? Every single other place in the economy. The reason why they treat you as expendable as you are at your nice little job with your nice little desk, you're expendable over there. And it's because of the example that Jeff Bezos sets at Amazon, right? At my job. My company could just tell me to go fuck myself tomorrow if they wanted to.
Yeah.
There's nothing stopping them. No. They could easily just say, hey, Waz, it was nice knowing you. Go kill yourself. Bye. Like, and that would just be it. There would be no recourse. Nobody would have my back. Nobody would be helping me. It'd be over. And so, you know, I'm passionate about this shit. It's because, one, yes, I am somebody who once worked in a union at a factory not dissimilar from, at a basically a warehouse not dissimilar from those Amazon spots.
And you saw firsthand the benefits of it.
The benefits of it. And you know what I saw most importantly, Nando, and I know I've been rambling on, is that the biggest critique that you'll hear from individualists, anti-unionists, is the idea that if a nigga can't get fired, if there's no quote unquote accountability, nobody's gonna do any work. One. And two, there's no incentive for people to work harder because they're just on this one track. And I will tell you right now that that is pure and utter bullshit. I worked with people who understood the idea that as long as I'm here, I can work as slow as I want to move these boxes wherever they have to be. And I'm going to keep it pushing. But you know what? And I'll be honest. There were one or two guys in the sword aisle that I worked that might work like that. But you know what the vast majority of everybody else was? They're people who took dignity and pride in their work. Nobody wants to be seen as a piece of shit. Nobody wants to be seen as somebody who's bad at what they do. People want to have dignity and pride in who they are. They don't want to show up to work and everybody looking at them like they're not picking up their slack. That's not how people operate. And I'm sorry, call me pie in the sky, call me this. I believe in the fucking worker. I do. I believe in the people's ability to work hard, get shit done together. And that's my fucking soliloquy, Nando.
Like, also think about, like, how sociopathic that is. First of all, like, Americans work harder, like, longer hours for less pay than their contemporaries in Europe, for example. Like, I've been to Europe. Everyone loves to go to Europe. Shit works fine over there. You know, like, maybe the Amazon same-day shipping isn't the same, you know, level of efficiency. It might be two-day shipping. But, like, this idea that, like, I can't be slightly inconvenienced because the incentive structure isn't where, like, everyone in the United States is either going to starve unless they basically turn themselves into automaton workers who are just, like, you know, don't even take a 15-minute piss break. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just crazy. We are all in this together. Like, we're all, you know, we all, like, eventually that's going to come to you. You know what I mean? Like, you have a job as well. You are a worker as well. Like, we're like, if we stay united, even if there's always going to be people who are lazy, even in any job you've ever been, that's true. Like, whether it was union or whether it was not union, there's always people who, like, don't excel at the job. But like Waz said, the vast majority of people do their best, you know, are just kind of trying to get by, and they love to go to work and be the best person that they could be. I mean, that's just the vast majority of people. And with Amazon specifically, I mean, the reason why I thought this story was so remarkable is for two reasons. One, Alabama is a right to work state, which makes it very, very difficult to form a union. Also, Alabama is, like you said, is about as red a state as you can get. And if we were to see like large union membership in a state like Alabama, you would see Alabama transform politically, you know? Republicans thrive in low union states. Think about the two most unionized states in America, New York and California. They're the two most unionized states in California. They're also the richest states in California, you know? I mean, in the United States, sorry. Right. And the other thing that's remarkable is that because it is Amazon, like Amazon is symbolically kind of the company of the future state of the world. You know, like you said, Jeff Bezos is the richest guy in the world. Amazon, he also happens to own the newspaper in the capital of the most powerful and richest country in the world. He owns the Washington Post, worth remembering. You know, not a coincidence that he bought the Washington Post, of all places. Yeah, so it's symbolically like very, very important because Amazon has really transformed the U.S. economy and the global economy by extension. You know, Amazon has been one of those very transformative companies, and they've done it in large part thanks to their ability to not have unions. And because it's become so big and powerful, a unionization drive within Amazon would transform this country, like for the better. You know, it's in a way, its size is what makes it weak. It's kind of like the Death Star in Star Wars. You know, like when you have an economy with a bunch of small different little companies, it makes it much harder for workers to act collectively, right? But when there's one company, when there's one management to fight, you know, like, and there's tons of workers lying around. Like, I mean, it's crazy to imagine, like, some of the stats are mind-blowing with Amazon since the pandemic. You know, it's because it makes sense, you know, like people are at home and they need to order stuff. They can't go out and buy. So it's posted record profits, $6.3 billion in profits in the third quarter of 2020. $6.3 billion profit in a quarter. So think about that. If that's a whole year, that's $25 billion in profit, not revenue, profit. Okay. Obviously, Jeff Bezos is the richest guy in the world. And, you know, when the pandemic hit, Amazon gave its workers an extra $2 an hour as like a sort of emergency thing. That ended in May, and there's no.
The profits didn't end, guys.
The profits did not end. The extra $2 an hour did
and again,
end.
And, you know? And again, we're talking about Amazon. Like, it's always going to be framed to normal people as, you know, well, shit, man. If the freaking boutique jewelry store became unionized, then, bro, you stop making these dumbass comparisons. It's Amazon. They're generating billions of profits off of those people's labor. Sorry, part of what people love is how fast they package it and ship it. Straight up and down, that's the freaking model, the efficiency of it. Straight up, people don't go to Amazon because they get their stuff in 1 week. They go because of how fast it's getting to everybody, and those workers are not protected and don't get to share in the success of the company. Why? How is that fair? How is that right? And fuck being fair or being right, it's fucking criminal, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's criminal to do people like this. And so I just think it's such a cool story what's happening down there. I actually read it with a bit of pride.
Yeah, it would be historic.
Yeah, it would be historic.
It'd be the first, just for context. So Amazon in the United States, like there's some Amazon warehouses in Europe that are unionized, none in the United States. Amazon has grown so much in the pandemic. Amazon has been hiring since July, has been hiring an average of 2,800 people per day. Per day. Okay? Like, if Amazon unionized, that's millions of, like, hundreds of thousands of people, maybe millions of people all of a sudden. Like, it would be completely transformed. It would change the fabric of this country, would change the politics of this country for the better in ways that we can't even begin to imagine. And the fact that it's starting in Alabama is so key for that.
And again, I tell this story all the time, and I'll tell it again. A close homie of mine, he was talking about his grandfather, who was a union guy, and he was like, why is my grandfather was a fucking racist? he fucking hated black people and Mexican people so much.
Yeah.
But you know who he hated the worst? Republicans.
There you go.
Because he knew those people were the enemy of keeping his family fed, keeping his pension intact, getting a being paid a dignified, livable wage. Like he knew, like he just knew it materially, like what actually materially mattered. Like, I don't give a fuck. Yeah. I hate the Republicans. And what Nando said is important. They can't thrive in high union places because the unions know. Nobody, I mean, as much as the Democrats are not pro-union, nobody's more anti-union than the Republican Party yeah. establishment.
They're hyper-focused
like,
on
they,
it.
Yeah. They are. It's on the plank, bro. It's on the party, like, principle. It's like, no. Union's bad, period. And so that's a story to be watching. I think we're going to keep you guys abreast on that because I think that's fantastic news. And it's something we should – it's the opposite of fucking Prop 22 or whatever the fuck happened here in L.A. And so that brings us to our newest segment, Nando.
Yeah.
And I like to call it – I'm workshopping the name, but I think I'm going to call it – I think Barry's kind of a douche. That's the name of the segment. I think Barry's kind of a douche, and in this week's version of it, and God bless Nando, he's the co-executive producer of this show. He happened upon news in the Vanity Fair that Barack Obama is producing a show. Producing a show about how dumb Trump is, a comedy show about how dumb Donald Trump is.
Yeah, the guy who beat his successor.
The guy who beat his successor. The guy who, I'm sorry, got more votes than Barack Obama did in both his elections. And here's the thing. Barry has so much political capital, social capital. Like, he could kind of actually lead some type of revolution. Like, that's the sad part about it. I'm not saying, you know, we would turn this into the Bolsheviks or anything like that, but he could lead some type of baby revolutionary change if he so chose. He's that beloved. He has that many followers. Instead, he chooses to do shit like this. And the reason why I don't respect it, Nando, because it's corny as chicken shit. If he would have did, yo, look at what the Republican Party gave you. If he made a special about that and explained to people like, no, this is not actually Donald Trump, this individual. It's that entire institution that did this to you. That institution is evil. And if he did that, I'd be like, shit, I might be down with that. But, oh, President Trump is doofy.
Yeah, and then the other thing he came out today was like saying that, you know, like, you know, criticizing activists and stuff for saying the term defund the police, you know, so like he spends most of his political energy fighting the left. Like he does. He just straight up does. And it's just like, imagine what would happen if Barack Obama came out tomorrow and spoke in favor of the Amazon union drive in Alabama.
Forget about it.
Think about that, you know, like. Instead, he produced a documentary called American Factory, which showed during his presidency a unionization fight in an auto plant in Michigan that was owned by a Chinese company and how it was defeated. You know what I mean? And it's like, dude, first of all, you were president. You could have like spoken out against for that. You could have done something about it. Instead, he did nothing about it. He stayed quiet. And he will not say anything about Amazon, as will no other mainstream Democrat, because Jeff Bezos is a good liberal. He is. Jeff Bezos is like he's a Democrat. Like, he votes Democrat. He, you know, like he is, you know, Nancy Pelosi and sort of like the sort of upper echelon of the Democratic Party are very tight with people like Jeff Bezos. Like, they will not go against his interests ever. At all.
Ever.
And Obama is not about to do that. Instead, what he's been up to recently has just been basically beating back at activists, the left, people who are trying to change this country for the better, while he kind of collects his checks to do stupid shows like this one on
Trump
Netflix.
Goofy. That's the name of the show. Like,
yeah,
holy fucking shit with these people, bro. Like, that's the show. Trump is goofy. Trump comedy.
Yeah.
Wow, bro. Just fucking wow. And so anyway, I know that today's show is a brief show. You know, thank you guys for listening. Of course, make sure you become a patron of countthedings.com and patreon.com/countthedings. Make sure you rate subscribe and give us the thumbs up on YouTube. Become a freaking YouTube subscriber. Count the dings. YouTube yes, page. YouTube.
We're too pretty for the podcast.
Exactly. YouTube.com/count the dings. Make sure you're doing that. And of course, make sure you're checking out all of the offerings on the Bomb Network. We just launched that Instagram page. Please go follow the Instagram, y'all. Please go follow the Instagram. It's BOMM podcast at Instagram.com, man. Please, please, please check us out over there. We just launched the Bomb page. You're going to love the content that's coming out of there. We actually have dedicated social media people now. I think you're going to enjoy the content that comes out of there. And just keep checking out what we're doing. We appreciate you guys, man. I hope you guys had a happy and safe holiday. I know I did. And Fernando Vila, I'm Big Waz. We'll see you next week. Peace.